Okay, moreover, Rabbi Yisai, I have the great opportunity to speak of the Rav of the Week this week, my Rebbe, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. This is actually one of the most difficult shirim for me to give, because I want you to be able to prepare for Shabbos, so I won't go on for hours and hours, which I can. And I had the great zchus in 2002, when Rav Aaron passed away in 2001, so I used to give a Yahrzeit shir. They always would start off by saying, the chutzpah it is for me, somebody who I really don't consider myself a Talmud. It's like when Rav Aaron once said to me, when Rav Aaron was once describing me, so he was saying, no, you should do that, you should do this, you're a Talmud Chacham. And I started laughing, and I said, Rebbe, I'm not a Talmud Chacham. So he looked at me and he said, and this is one amazing thing about Rav Aaron, he has such an amazing sense of humor. He said, are you calling me stupid? And I'm like, what? He said, you're a Talmud of a Chacham. I'm the Chacham, you're the Talmud. Always realize that. And really what that meant was a beautiful idea, in that somebody who's a true Talmud Chacham is always learning and learning, always wants to learn. Rav Aaron, Baruch Hashem, was 84, some say 83 years old when he passed away. He was always learning. He always, when people came in, always wanted to know things. He always wanted to, he had a very close relationship with a famous doctor, Dr. Fred Rosner, and he always wanted to know more and more and more about medical issues. He would always ask me in my days, my first job, so I worked in the Ministry of Defense of Israel. So he always thought, like, I worked for the Shabak or something. I had, like, inside information. So what's going on? Tell me what's going on. Rebbe, I don't really know anything. Maybe if we have a chance, I'll tell an interesting story that happened there. So what I'm going to do today is probably a little bit different than the normal Rebbe of the Week. And that is that I'm going to tell some personal reflections and hopefully a Dvar Torah that will relate to our Parshios, telling a bit about Rav Aaron. So first, of course, I want to start just with a brief history of who Rav Aaron was, which is obviously very important to understanding Rav Aaron. Rav Aaron was born in 1917, some say 1918, in a town in Europe, actually in Western Russia, Chasavish, where his father was Rav. Okay, just so you understand, very important. I'm sure somebody will be speaking about Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik. So his father was Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was one of the most amazing things that happened to YU, Yeshiva University Reitz at those days, was that they asked Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, and he said yes. Moshe Soloveitchik was the son of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was the brisker, developed the brisker derech, the way that every single Litvish yeshiva learns today, from Panovich to Meir to Lakewood, is based on this tradition of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. So this is anybody that has the last name Soloveitchik, so it's a very special family name. And of course, the great-grandfather was the famous Beis Halevi, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, the first Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. And then, of course, they came from Volozhin, the Netziv, many, many connections. And in fact, the Rav Aaron's connection also, his mother was a prisoner. Prisoner were from the Feinstein family. So he was cousins with the famous Rav Moshe Feinstein, who we received smicha from. Okay. So that was, Rav Aaron was born. Rav Aaron tells a very interesting story that he was born. So it was during the Russian Revolution, and there were no hospitals. You could not get out to go to hospitals because of the bombing. So they only had a midwife, which he says wasn't even a midwife. They called her Bubby, and Bubby delivered the baby. So unfortunately, when he was ready to be born, he was a breech baby, which generally meant that he needed to go out right away, which would be a cesarean section, which obviously could not be done in somebody's home. And his mother was then informed that he would potentially be brain damaged from the lack of oxygen. So Rav Aaron said, and I quote, "I am still a breech baby. I still forge my own path, and I don't always keep in line with everyone else." This, I think, best defines Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik did not care what other people thought. He gave a very famed Chumash Shir every single Thursday. Our shir was very, very small. We had less than 10 people in the shir. But when we had Chumash Shir, So there were tons of people would want to come. Why? Because Rav Aaron would say it like it is. These were before, you know, Why You Torah days, and you put everything on Why You Torah, and you're scared if you're going to say that, how is it going to be interpreted? Rav Aaron probably wouldn't care anyway. And he really told it like it was. He said some amazing things. I think it was with Mordechai Gifter. He was opposed to the Vietnam War. Rav Mordechai Gifter once said there was something going on, like nowadays, in many of these countries in Africa. So there's something going on in a country called Biafra. I have no idea what was going on there. And he was very opposed to it, and he spoke out against it. And I have this, the quote here somewhere, but he basically said, Rav Aaron Cutler, I'm sorry, Rav Mordechai Gifter said, it's not that he's the only Rosh Hashiva who spoke out against what's going on in Biafra. He's the only Rosh Hashiva who knows what Biafra is. He knows where it is. He really, really cared. Rav Aaron really cared about these things. So in 1929, Rav Aaron was 12 years old. He was asked to, his father was asked to become Rosh Hashiva in YU, Rosh Hashiva, Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan in New York, and they couldn't afford at that point to bring the rest of the family. So Rav Moshe went by himself, and there's many great stories about what Rav Yosef dove during that time. So he needed a melamed. He needed somebody to teach him. So at the time, he learned with not yet famous Rav Yitzchak Huttner, who would become a famed Rosh Yeshiva of Rav Chaim Berlin in Brooklyn. And that was his melamed when he was 23 years old. Rav Aaron was 12, and Rav Moshe Soloveitchik wrote that because he was turning bar mitzvah, he asked that he not be bar mitzvah formally with a party, whatever they did in those days, and wait till he came. And Rav Yitzchak Huttner thought that was very, very wrong, and he said he gained all the funds to make sure that he had a proper bar mitzvah at that time. There's another great story. I think if I'm not mistaken, it's in Nefesh HaRav, where they tell the story about Rav Aaron Soloveitchik and wearing tefillin, Chol HaMoed, and Rav Yitzchak Huttner was not against the general psak of brisk in this. It was very, very cute Torah between Rav Yitzchak Huttner. Later, Rav Yitzchak Huttner would meet Rav Aaron again, and he would offer him a position in Rav Chaim Berlin. So it's very interesting how things kind of come back at you. So Rav Aaron finally comes to America. Now he's over bar mitzvah age a year later. And he doesn't know English, so he needs to learn English. So Rav Moshe finds YU, his father finds Rav Avigdor Miller. Rav Avigdor Miller was the Mashgiach Ruchani of Rav Chaim Berlin. This is kind of funny, these two things. People don't know this, people don't want to know this, but Rav Avigdor Miller went to YU. He went to at least MTA, and he taught him English. He taught Rav Aaron English. It's interesting how these things come back to you. He received smicha from both his father, Rav Moshe, and Rav Moshe Feinstein. And in fact, Rav Aaron is very well known for being a very, very humble person. He never thought much of himself, but of course knew who he was. But at the Levaya for Rav Aaron, his son-in-law, Rav Rafael Marcus, said the following thing. He took out the smicha from Rav Moshe. He had it with him. And he said people don't even know that he received smicha from Rav Moshe Feinstein. And he read the smicha document at the Hespin, and he said the following. It said that Rav Aaron Soloveitchik is one of the Gedolei Hador of our generation. And said Rabbi Marcus, he said, this was in the generation of the Chazon Ish, Rav Aaron Cutler, Rav Yitzchak Huttner, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zechonon Levracha, all these people. He obviously knew, you know, when Rav Moshe wrote it, who he was talking about. He didn't just write that stam. Right, as opposed to my smicha, Rav Aaron wrote glowing words about me. Obviously, he didn't know who I was. So that sometimes people just write things. But this was the great, and in fact, he came. His first job was he was a magid shir in Rav Moshe Feinstein's yeshiva. When he was 27 years old, he became a magid shir. That being said, Rav Aaron was very nervous that he would not be able to invest his life in Torah. Rav Aaron very much spoke about the importance of somebody having a job. He spoke to me all the time. When we had Shear, so I was the only one in Shear in those days that actually went to YU. The people there were much, much older. So I had to go to class. So Rav Aaron generally, I don't know how this was possible, I mean, thinking about who I am now, but Rav Aaron would give Shear generally between, usually the average would be about 2 hours, right? Can you imagine sitting in a room for 2 hours? I can't imagine sitting in a room for 30 minutes. So one speaker, two and a half hours sometimes. So sometimes he would stop the shiur. He was in middle, and it was about 2:30. 2:30 is when secular classes start, about 3 o'clock, and he would stop. And he has to stop. Dove has to go to class. It's like, oh no. So unfortunately, as would become, you know, my tradition. I would lie to Rav Aaron and I would say, "No, Rebbe, I don't have class today. I'm going to make the, you know, nine other guys not listen to this. No, Rebbe, it's fine." So then he would continue. It was very machbid. People should have a job. People should do this. I remember. Sorry, when we were in Smichas here, so he gives Smichas here in his apartment on Wednesday nights. So it was such a great, awesome experience those years, and. So we were learning Ebenezer, and so he was talking about, again, as I said, he used to tell it like it is. So he was telling over some stories, and he's saying, a person has to have a job, you can't just sit and learn Torah all the time. Because a person, what is he going to do? He's going to lie to his wife under the chuppah and say, "I'm going to support you," and he signs the ksuva, and then he says to her, "You become a sheitel macher, I'm going to learn for the rest of my life," meaning you get a job, and that's not appropriate. A person is very, very into that, very important. That was something that's very important. Just wanted to point out also, he was showed such an amazing, amazing relationship with his wife, Rebbetzin Ella Soloveitchik. Zichrono Levracha was, in my opinion, one of the reasons why Rav Aaron passed away, because when his wife passed away, was a year before, if I'm not mistaken. So Rav Aaron, I remember, was with her for those months. He loved her. I remember every Wednesday night after Shir, he would pick up the phone. Sometimes I had this chus, I used to call. These are, unfortunately, Rav Aaron would have, for many years, had, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but he had a rotary phone, right? One of those old phones. So you have to dial, it was so difficult because you have to dial, you know, there was an area code, you have to call Chicago. And then he would love, you'd see the smile on his face. He says, "Rebbetzin, I gave shir and there was 15 people here and I gave shir for 2 hours." You know, and he just was beaming ear to ear. And he loved the weeks, or a few weeks, that she would actually come. And it was a wonderful experience to see them together. And something certainly a person could learn from. So just a minute or so more of the history, and then we'll do some words of Torah. Rav Aaron was asked to be Magid Shir in Rav Yitzchak Elchanan. I'm sorry, Rav Chaim Berlin from 1948 to 1959. He had some great talmidim, one of whom was the Novominsk Rav, who now is the head of Agudas Yisrael. There's just some great stories. Rav Aaron was so immersed in Torah, when he would take the train from Chaim Berlin, Rav Avigdor Miller had to appoint somebody to follow him because he used to find himself missing the stop. He would go, he wouldn't remember, and he would go just keep going on the train because he was sitting and learning. They would say they used to see him the way he would walk in the streets, because he was always thinking and learning, so he had one foot in the sidewalk, one foot in the street. It was just very, very interesting, apparently, to see this. He would always give money to the people in the street. There's a story about a drunk person who he knew who he was. I guess he was a Jewish person. And he said, "Come to my house. I want you to take a shower. This is crazy. What are you doing outside?" Rav Aaron very, very much cared. When Rav Aaron was 42 years old, in 1959, he became took over the shir of his brother, Rav Yosher Ber. We learned for many years from him as well. And he gave shir simultaneously in the two yeshivas, which was quite interesting. And people said those were the great years of Rav Aaron, who's giving shir in Chaim Berlin, shir in YU as well. Then Rav Aaron went on in 1966. He was appointed as a Rosh Yeshiva and asked to go to Chicago. I believe that it was Rav Moshe Feinstein who pushed him that he should really go to Chicago. This was obviously a huge step for him. And he went to what you guys know today as Skokie Yeshiva, which is interesting parenthetically. His brother, Rav Yosef Dov, was actually asked to be Rosh Yeshiva there. He became Rosh Yeshiva there. He started his own yeshiva in 1974. We don't have time to go into the politics, but it's an amazing story showing who Rav Aaron was. Rav Aaron very much protested a certain building that was being sold to people who were Oved Avodah Zarah, and he protested it to such a point, it was one of the board members who owned the building, and there was a whole ganze mice, and he had to leave because of that, but he stood by his ground, even though he knew he would lose his job doing that. In 1983, Rav Aaron had a debilitating stroke. It was mamish something. I only knew him, of course, after the stroke. Apparently, when he gave shir, he used to run around. My father was in the shir. Really, the reason why I chose to go to Rav Aaron's shir is because of my father, and I have tremendous hakar zatov for that. So in 1983, he had the stroke, which left his entire left side of his body paralyzed. And this, I just want to spend a moment speaking about, because this was probably one of the most amazing things in the world. He literally, his left side of his body, he would be shaking. And towards the end of the life, when I was in shir, so it would take him about, I don't know, 30 minutes to walk from this location, let's say, to where my makom is. But he would want to do it. He insisted on walking, because his wife told him, "You have to walk, you have to keep moving." And he would say some very interesting things. He would be in so much pain. So sometimes when he would walk, we would hear him say, achas v'achas, achas v'shtayim, achas v'shtayim, like the Kohen Gadol would do. And then finally when he would sit down, he would sit down, and then you would say, oh my God, he was shaking, he was in so much pain. And when shiur would start, you would think he was like 20 years old. There was nothing, you wouldn't know anything. I had this chus many days, I had this chus of eating lunch with him. He used to come and he said, what's that smell? What are you eating? Oh, it's a tuna fish sandwich. Sorry, Rebbe. And so I would have this chus of sometimes eating lunch with him. And that's really when I would schmooze a lot. I had this chus of schmoozing with him. And he had such an amazing sense of humor also. He always made you feel, you know, this was a gadol ador. And I'm sitting with him and he sometimes start off with a joke. I remember one time I had this chus of driving him to a bar mitzvah. It was the scariest moments of my life because I really hadn't driven so much and I had no idea where Brooklyn was. We had no such thing as Waze in those days, no such thing as GPSs, and so thank God there were other people in the car. So you must have seen how nervous I was. So he sat in the front, I remember, and he looks at me and he goes, Dov, he says, who are the four bubbas? Four bubbas. I'm like, oh, finally a question I can get in shiur. Sarah, I got this one. You know, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. No, you're wrong. Bava Metzia, Bava Kama, Bava Basra, and Bava Maisa. And I was like, when Rosh Hashiva tells a joke like that, it's funny. And I saw he wanted to just make me feel comfortable. And that's Rav Aaron. Rav Aaron was that, and he had such a great sense of humor. Tell stories about him, and in the controversies in the days where people were doing small mechitzas and this, and they say, Rebbe, what do you think about the mechitza in our shul? They would walk into the shul. He goes, I don't know. I can't pass an halacha on a mechitza I don't even see. Like that was the joke. We had the great zchus that Rav Aaron, in 1986, was invited to come back to YU. My father had him back in the 60s, and he was asked to come back to YU really to take Rav Aaron, his brother Shear. His brother was sick at that point and was not able to give Shear. But this person who had a stroke and was paralyzed on the left side of the body would travel every week. Okay, every single Tuesday morning, he would travel from Chicago. He was a Rosh Yeshiva and started his own yeshiva, as I said, in 1974, keeping the Brisk Yeshiva in Chicago alive. He would give shiurim there from Thursday night to Tuesday morning, and then come give a shiur Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And Rav Aaron insisted upon it. It was so grueling for him. It was so difficult. It's such an amazing, amazing courage that Rav Aaron had to be able to continue to doing that mamish until the end of his life. And would give shurim, and it's just a mamish, mamish amazing. Okay, so let's get to some of the Torah of Rav Aaron. And with that, I just want to do a last quote. Many years ago, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein had a beautiful essay that he wrote, talking about his leaders, the ones that really shaped his life. And he said that there were three leaders, and they were, of course, his father-in-law, Rav Yossi Philip Soloveitchik, Rav Yitzhak Huttner, who we've learned about before, and Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. And he said, let me tell you about Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, and this is a quote. Rav Aaron, too, I learned much from, but above all, served as a role model. Rav Aaron, while an inspiring vision that somehow seemed within reach, truly presented a model. It wasn't so much what he said or did, it was simply enthralled by what he was, a remarkable fusion of mastery and simplicity, of vigor and humility, and above all, a pillar of radical integrity. That's what I think of Rav Aaron. And when I give my business shiurim, I try to understand that, you know, maybe one of the reasons I'm not in business anymore is that it's just the way Rav Aaron was. You got to be honest. There's nothing but honesty. There's nothing but ethics. There's nothing but, it doesn't work as a Jew. It can't work any other way. I'll just read the last line. Upon attaining full maturity, I came to realize that the notion that I could attain his level was, I'm not even going to say the words because I had never heard these words before. This is Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. But his hold upon me, the ambition, the commitment that generated, I want to this day. That was Rav Aaron. Okay, so let's do a little bit of Torah. I apologize for the long introduction, but I think it's important to understand the type of person that he was. So I'll tell you my first experience with Rav Aaron. Before that, Rav Aaron writes in his sefer, a number of svarim, but there are two sefers in English, Logic of the Mind, Logic of the Heart, and a sefer on the parsha, the warmth and the light. And then he has two svarim on the Rambam, and many, many, many articles. So I just want to read you this very important Dvar Torah so we could, it really will, I hope, encapsulize Rav Aaron's Torah. So he writes that we know that it says in, he quotes the Sifri in Ekev and Parshas Ekev the following. Our sages say, if you want to understand Hashem, delve into Agadata. And through Agadata, you can recognize God cleaves to his ways. Our sages also say, do not say, I learned halachas, and this is enough for me. No. The Torah says, again, Parshas Ekev, for not, right, ki lo halechem levado yichya adam, for not bread alone does man live, but everything that emanates from his mouth of Hashem does man live. And the verse in Shema, v'yafta Hashem elokecha b'chol levavcha, b'chol navshecha, b'chol mildecha, Parshas Echanan, so the Sifri also comments in Parshas Echanan, what is love? All these words shall be, if you want to understand Hashem, delve to Hashem, delve to His Torah. How can these sayings be reconciled? They appear to be the opposite. One says, don't only learn halacha, and one says, learn halacha. I mean, learn Torah. One says, no, you want to cleave to God. You say, I got it, you have to do other things. So Rav Aaron said, how can this be? So he says, for example, he says, and the blood of the grape, v'dam anav tishteh. So he says, what does this mean? These are agados. They are to track man's heart like wine, says the Sifri. This means that halacha is compared to bread, while agadata is compared to wine. Bread is indispensable for man's existence, but wine is indispensable for man's happiness, as is written, Yain Yismach Leva Enosh. Right? The idea is that we need both. We need Torah, but we also need agadata. We also need shmuzim. I heard from my mother, Rav Aaron says, of saintly memory, that there are two approaches to the appreciation of nature. One is the approach of the scientist, and the other is the approach of the poet. Very interesting. This is only Rav Aaron would say this. It's like the way the Rambam would writes many times. When the scientist looks at a forest, they are interested in each tree, in each specific leaf, specific flower, each root, in each stem. They are not interested in the forest in its entirety. The poet, on the other hand, takes an overall view of the forest and claims, how vast are your creations? Right? Ma'rabu ma'sech Hashem, kulam b'chachmas isa. Similarly, that's Torah. Just as the universe at large is endowed with a mind and a heart, the halacha represents mind and Torah. Mind. Right? Agadata is the heart of Torah. You need to have both. You need to have the mind and the heart together. The mind of the Torah and the heart of the Torah represented, that is the entity of what Rav Aaron calls logic of the mind and logic of the heart. And that's why we need both. The halacha, logic of the mind and the heart compared to bread, while agadata is compared to wine. Why agadata? Wine, because it's good. But you need bread to live. So you need to learn everything, both. On Shabbos and Yontif, Jews recite the blessing first on wine, then on bread, because the logic of the heart precedes logic of the mind. So these are, and then he presents, these are going to be my hashkafa shiurim on this. That, I think, is Rav Aaron. When we talk about the parshas that we're in now, right? So we talk about how the Kohen Gadol, in this week's parsha, in Pitzaveh, the Kohen Gadol had to wear what? Two things. The Ketzos HaChoshen, but also on his head, what did he wear? The tzitz. Because that was what it is to be a true Jew. Mind and heart. Rav Aaron would speak many times about paskening halacha. And he would say that paskening halacha has nothing to do with just knowing the halacha. You can't just do that. You need to know the person. I would get psakim from Rav Aaron sometimes, and he would say to me, this psak is for only for you. Don't share it with other people. It's for your specific time, your specific moment. But it doesn't apply to anybody else. That's a gadol. I told stories about Rav Moshe Feinstein, the same thing, where he matured. In one case, he was talking about a case where he matured a mamzer and how the mamzer would be able to remarry. So, unbelievable stories. But that's a gadol ador. You take the mind of the heart. You know the stories about gadolim where they would cry when someone would tell over a mic. I feel for you. That's the way a Jew has to be. That's what the Kohen represented. It's not just this halacha. For example, you can't just say, I don't mean this facetiously, you can't tell somebody if you're wearing shatnez, your tefillahs aren't answered. That's logical. That's just logic of the heart. Let's just say, well, that's what it said. A logical mind, sorry. That's just not. Know the person. Know that there are other people who say different things. You can't just say that. It's not appropriate. That's what Rav Aaron would learn. I'll tell you the first time I ever spoke to Rav Aaron in my life. I was in the Beis Medrash in YU. At least that I remember. I was in the Beis Medrash in YU and I was writing for one of the publications. YU has a weekly Shabbos publication. That's Naim L'Torah. So I was writing an essay for the Parshios of Yosef revealing himself to the brothers. And I said, Rebbe, so I had this contradiction. I didn't understand. The Pasuk says, Aval Hashem Manachnu, right? That the brothers say, they admitted, they knew right before Yosef revealed himself, we really screwed up. This is why we're being punished here. And they say the words, they finally admit, Aval Hashem Manachnu. I didn't understand what was going on there. So I went up to Rav Aaron. I never met. I said, Rebbe, can you explain this pasuk to me? And he looked at me and he started screaming like this. Kushta! 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 And I'm like, what the heck is going on? This rabbi's cuckoo. Like, I thought, you don't understand. He was shaking. I said, oh, he's probably out of it. Like, and that was like, people used to say that. And that's certainly something that wasn't true. And I said, Rebbe, can you explain this? Bring me a chumash. Bring me a chumash. And then he goes to Parshas Shoftim, and he points to the pasuk tzedek tzedek terdov, and lo and behold, the unkelus says kushta kushta. That means tzedek tzedek. I'm like okie dokie. Still don't understand. He says okay, now let's go to your parsha, and he looks at the pasuk aval nashem no nachnu, and the word aval is interpreted as kushta by unkelus. Says Rav Aaron, that's exactly what the brothers were saying. Bitzedek. We did injustice, want to kill our brother. We were a mock basin of brothers, and we realized that he was the Esav, Yishmael of our generation, and he needed to be killed. But where did they go wrong? Tzedek, tzedek, tirdof, what does it mean? Bit tzedek, you should pursue tzedek. Meaning what? He says, you can't just be, a judge is just not a judge in a vacuum. A judge is a judge with rachmanas. I mean, not because the guy walks in and looks in a certain way. He tries to push Peshara sometimes. He tries to figure it so that he gets the exact psak. To be a judge, you have to have logic of the mind, logic of the heart as well. And this is the first time I ever heard any Torah from him, but this would define who Rav Aaron was. They say in this week's parshas, he mentioned this in Lessons of the Lev, but this idea as well. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't be the Kohen Gadol. Because Aaron, the Kohen, was Oyev Shalom, Rodev Shalom. He was that combination of logic of the mind, logical heart. He was the combination of the tzitz and the ketzos achoshet. That's who he was. And that's a big difference. And that's something that's very, very special. Again, to me, what Rav Aaron defined was this combining of the two. Even when it came to life. And this is, I've said this to our Torah hundreds of times already in my life. I always have my, I call my pocket Rav Aaron Devar Torah. This is the one I always tell. But again, I think this defines who Rav Aaron is, back in our idea. So Rav Aaron would say this at least twice a year. Parshas Baaloscha, and then again he would say it Chanukah time. But of course it relates to our parshas. And I think it's the same idea. He explains that the menorah, the Rambam says that the menorah was uniquely fashioned in a miracle way, if you will, that all of the candles face the Shamash. That they would, when they would be lit, it would miraculously kind of tilt towards that. And he would explain, so why was that? So Rav Aaron explained, and this is something that the Chovetz Chabad speaks about, that when a person goes out, so he should learn other humanities. He shouldn't just learn Torah, Rav Aaron used to say. Rav Aaron is very into getting a secular education. I said that, I was saying before, that Rav Aaron wasn't sure he was going to be a Rosh Hashiva. And so he went to NYU Law School, became a lawyer, and in fact, had some few law cases, I think, or at least threatening law cases that he knew law quite well, because he wasn't sure. And so he said that a person has to go ahead, and he has to know Chachmas HaTeva, nature, Chachmas HaShemesh, stars, the moon. He has to go out, and he has to go, and he has to learn mathematics, science. Those are all the branches of the Torah. And each of them, right, music, but they're all centered around the Shamash, which is the Torah. Go out and find a profession. But remind yourself that it's all centered around that shamash. That's that combination of logic of the mind and logic of the heart. You can't live a life without both. That was Rav Aaron. For me, one of the most amazing parts of Rav Aaron as well, as I said before, is that he made you feel like any question was a good question. Ask and do. It was great. I'll tell you just a few ending stories which defines who he was. At nights, so most of the nights when he would be in YU, so he would have his apartment in Reuben Hall, so somebody would have to sleep in the room next to him to make sure that everything was okay. And the person used to report to me that many nights he would wake up in the middle of the night and he would tell him to, it was usually one of his grandsons, bring me a Gemara. And when he would listen to him, he would hear that in the middle of the night he was mumbling Gemaras. And he would stop in the middle of the night, he'd forget a piece of Gemara or something. He said, let me see the Gemara now. I can imagine doing that. I remember one week, Rav Aaron was writing his Sefer on the Rambam, Perech Mata Arun, and he left his notebook back in Chicago. He was very upset because he thought he packed it. He was very, very upset about it. So he said, okay, what am I going to do? So he told me, go across the street, buy me a notebook. He bought a notebook, and he spent the next few hours writing, apparently, what I heard later on, was exactly the same things that he wrote in the other notebook, meaning he remembered everything that was written in that notebook. And of course, later it was published. The care and concern he had for people were such a unique thing. When Rav Aaron would make Havdalah, so every week he would pick up the phone and call a widow. And when people asked him, halachically, really, over the phone, he says, I can't embarrass her and have her tell her she has to come to my house because it's too embarrassing for her. But she would never make Havdalah. Every week he would be machbe to do that. He has this famous story where he went. This is amazing. He had such a love of Eretz Yisrael. His love of Eretz Yisrael, certainly is my love of Eretz Yisrael. There's a beautiful article in Logic of the Mind, Logic of the Heart. I just can't understand how somebody wouldn't say Halal Yom Ha'atzmaut. I'm talking about the bracha or not. But not recognizing the great miracle that Hashem is very into Hakaras HaTov. Always was very, very into Hakaras HaTov. He always would thank the flight attendants. Would always I think it was United Air that he took, I forgot. But they were always like shocked by him. I'll just tell you an amazing, amazing story. Oh, such an amazing story. Somebody came to the Shiva call and said to Rav Aaron, the weirdest thing, said to his children during Rav Aaron's Shiva, the craziest thing happened to him. Imagine this. I'm at the Chicago Bears game, okay? And he receives the information, happened to be, it was Chol HaMoed. He died on Chai Tishrei, Chol HaMoed Sukkos. And he's at the game, okay, for better or worse, whatever. This guy's at a game. And he gets a call, and he picks up the phone, and he's like white in the face. He goes, oh God, he hears that Rav Aaron Soloveitchik passed away. So the guy behind him, if you've ever gone to a football game, there's a lot of camaraderie there. The guy behind him says, what's going on, man? Is everything okay? It looked like somebody died in his family, He says, no, it's okay. It's like, some non-Jewish guy, just don't mess with him. He's like, he's got his two beers in his hand. He says, no, he says, my rabbi just passed away. It's very sad for me. And you see this guy's face becomes white, this big non-Jewish guy, and he says, it's not Rabbi Soloveitchik, is it? And he's like, yes, it is. And he drops the two beers. Now, for a guy to drop two beers is a big deal. And he's like, what? So he's getting a little nervous, what's going on here? He says that my wife is the flight attendant that takes that trip every week from Chicago to New York. And she said she always comes home. She says, I never met such a holy person. He's so kind to me, he's so nice, he's so... And they used to always... Can you imagine this non-Jewish family was talking about Rav Aaron Soloveitchik all the time? Who's Rav Aaron Soloveitchik? Who's it? Right? I don't know if they called him... Soloveitchik was hard. I remember when we used to... he used to have to take a little... They had one of these mini cars that they would take from his shir room to back to Reuben. So one of the, many of the times I'd tell the security guard, Rabbi Soloveitchik needs the go-car or whatever. So the guy would go, BD1, BD2, Rabbi Soloveitchik needs a, that's the way we were describing. But that's a wonderful, wonderful story. The famous story is that he went to Eretz Yisrael, where we go many times. He actually, his son, who I became somewhat close with, Rav Chaim, of course, lives here. So he wanted to be here. The place is named for Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, his shul, and he wanted to live here. When Prime Minister Rabin was going to sign the Oslo Accords, he had to do something. He couldn't just leave it alone. He was very involved with Pollard. He visited him all the time. And Rav Aaron went to visit Prime Minister. He got an appointment with him, which was like unheard of. And he gave his famous vort. He said, there are certain people in the world that can get Olam Haba like this. He says, and he was very, very respectful. He says, Premier, Prime Minister, you can get Olam Haba and Shas Achas if you don't sign this agreement. I wish you a Chag Sameach, and that was it, and he walked out. That was Rav Aaron. He was very, very close with Prime Minister Sharon. In fact, I once answered the phone. At that time, he wasn't Prime Minister then. He actually was a brisker. He called, and I thought it was a prank call. Hello, this is Ariel. I'm like, oh, you sure? Yeah. No, it was really him. I'll just end off with my own personal story, which actually was written up in the Jerusalem Post when he passed away. I'll tell two stories if you don't mind. You can make Shabbos next week. Story number one was just an amazing story, because if you understand the magnitude of who he was. So when I told you I was working for the Ministry of Defense of Israel, so one time there was something going on. Prime Minister Netanyahu was in power, and he was very upset by something. And he says, I come into Shir, and he says, Dov, I would like you to set up a meeting with the Prime Minister. Tell him that I would like to meet him. And I'm like, Rebbe, you know like how there's like a janitor that works in like offices? I'm even worse than, I'm lower than that guy. He says, just do it. So, okay, I'll do my usual. I'll do my hishtatlas. I'll go to my boss, tell him that Rav Aaron Soloveitchik wants to meet with him. He'll tell me, are you crazy? And that would be it. So I go to work, and I go to my boss, and I say, you know, I'm a Talmud of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, and he wants to meet. He goes, ooh, of course, I know who Rav Soloveitchik is, I'm sure. He says, okay, fine. He says, I'll bring your message on to the head of the New York mission of the Ministry of Defense. He did that. That was it. Shkayach, I knew this wasn't going to go anywhere. Great. Very happy. 2 days later, I receive a call at my desk, another prank call. Was in Hebrew, for sure that was a prank call. Hello, we're calling from the office of the Prime Minister of Israel. We wanted to find out what day Rav Aaron Soloveitchik wanted to meet with Prime Minister Netanyahu. Now, the other thing is, it was on my work phone, and like nobody makes prank calls on that because then they kill them. And I was like, what? Are you kidding me? They're like, yeah. You made a request, and Bibi Netanyahu said, Rav Aaron wants to meet, I'm going to meet him. And he apologized. I didn't speak to Vivian Yajano, but she apologized and explained he's only going to be in Washington in his trip, and he can only meet him in Washington. So I was like shocked. I immediately called the Rebbetzin and I explained. And she said, oh, thank you so much for doing this. It's really too much for Rav Aaron to be able to travel all the way to Washington. Obviously, as I said, he was paralyzed. And he felt very good that he did at least his well. At least, you know, there was a certain message that he wanted to get through. My personal story, which I said, is my Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was set to be my Masada Kedushin at my wedding. And the following story happened. Rav Aaron was set to come. We scheduled everything. And first, I didn't tell him about the wedding because the Rebbetzin did not want me to have him travel from Chicago. It was a Sunday, my wedding, so he doesn't normally travel in. It was very difficult for him right after Shabbos. But then he kept asking me about it because he was a little bit upset that I was so old and not getting married. And then I said, but Rebbe, with all due respect, I think the Rebbe was 30 when he got married. So he said to me, it's not my fault. His wife is 10 years younger than him. So he says, you wanted me to get married at 20 and marry a 10-year-old? He said, I had to wait a little bit. This is what Hashem wanted. He always was very magu. Are you getting it? So he's very, very happy, and he wanted to come to the wedding. So he's coming. So he lands in Chicago. He comes from Chicago to New York, lands in Newark. And I have two illustrious people, I can't say their names now, but both of them are famous people now, are going to pick him up. And they got there a few minutes late. Rav Aaron comes out, and he doesn't see anybody. So he gets into a cab, and he says, I'm going to Staten Island, where we got married. Travels to Staten Island, and as the guy goes over the bridge, he says, I need a more specific address. So he says, no problem. I'm going to the Jewish catering hall over there. So the Pakistani driver is like, there are no Jews in Staten Island. I don't know what you're talking about. You need an exact address. He says, yes, I have it. So he opens up his bag in the back, and he's going through it. He can't find the invitation. So the guy gets in his head, the cab driver, oh my God, this guy's senile. He's crazy. He thinks there's Jews in Staten Island. So he says to him, "What? Where do you want to go?" He goes, "I know." And you know, Rav Amram is very, "I know where I want to go. Just take me to." And he pulls over the cab and he calls the police. And he says, "Listen, I got this senile guy here. For sure, he's not going to pay me. He doesn't know anything. What am I going to do? I don't even know where to drive him." So the police come. And they say, you know, as usual, they look at him and they go, "Excuse me, do you know who the President of the United States is?" And he says, Rav Aaron says, "I will not tell you who the President of the United States was. I will tell you every president." And he starts saying, "This and that, George Washington." And he goes, "Man, police officer's like, I don't think he's seen now. You know, you don't think he names presidents like none of us ever heard of." He's like, and so unfortunately, the police officer said, "Well, if you don't know exactly where to go, you know, he knows why you." He says, "Can you take me at least to Yeshiva University?" So of course he's traveling now back to Yeshiva University. My friends who are picking him up are traveling the other way. They don't see each other. I am now about to walk under the chuppah, and my friend comes to me and he says, "We lost Rav Aaron. We don't know where he is." And I walk down the aisle, and thank God there was another Masada Kedushin. But so Rav Aaron was very upset, and they asked if he wanted to come for dancing. I said, I caused such a horrible, no, it's okay. And then he wanted to come to Shavuot. He was just always caring. Finally, I remember he always would ask about, like, how's your father? Tell your father I will be there. That's it. And we're talking about the sense of humor. So I always remember, as I told you, I had the schuss of getting him lunch a lot. So I always said, my job sometimes was to buy him dessert. So Rav Aaron, interestingly enough, had a, I think it was low blood pressure, so he had to have a lot of salt in order to increase the blood pressure. So they encouraged him to have potato chips. So he always would say to me, "Dove, go across the street and get me potato chips. But not the Pashkis, the wise potato chips. I love them." You know, like, he's like, "What is the person doing here?" He had a sense of, it always just made you feel like that you were, you know, you were special. And that's something that's very, very unique. It's something that's very hard. I often think about it. Anybody that, you know, come to my office, you can see my pictures of Rav Aaron. I often look at it and say, you know, it's Chaval. A few weeks ago, somebody asked that amazing question. Who would they want to meet? Be'achras Hashonim. So, you know, we always had different answers, but for me, I'd love to meet Rav Aaron again and really get to meet him again. I had the great schus, this will be my final word. So Rav Aaron had become very sick in the middle of us taking smicha. And so sick that we were informed that possibly, unfortunately, he would not make it through a difficult time. And many of us, but certainly myself, said, "Shoot, we should have like gone quicker in the smicha. Now we're not going to get smicha. Rav Aaron's not aging." And he got better, and then we all said, "Okay, that's it." I said, we did a fast track. We were learning like crazy in order to get smicha. I had the great schus, I believe. I don't know if this is 100% accurate, but this is what I was told. I was the last person to ever receive smicha from Rav Aaron. Why? Not because I'm a tzaddik. Just a note. When they wrote the smicha, they write it on a kaf, and they write your name. So I was the only one. When the smicha came, they left out only one word. That was harav. When you sign it, says harav. Dov Menachem McLean was Kalman. Didn't say that. They left out him, probably on purpose. so I had to do it. It took a 2 weeks there, and then I was the last one to receive the smicha. So it was just a joke. I got it in under the wire, as they would say. So it's a great zechus that I have the zechus of telling you a little about who Rav Aaron was. And just to take this idea of the logic of the mind, the logic of the heart, of the idea of the Kohen Gadol, the idea of the menorah itself, that whatever we do centers around Torah. But you have to have thought. You can't just do this. You know, it's like when sometimes I see guys, they want to take upon themselves a new thing, but it's at the expense of the whole tzibur. You know, or it's this, or a guy goes home and he decides, you know what, I want to wear this type of thing. And he knows it's going to bother his parents to no end. Logic of the mind has to be also with the heart. The heart has to combine. Is this smart? Maybe I'll do this when I get married, but maybe it's not good. My parents are not going to react well to it. Or maybe doing this during davening is going to upset people. That's the way a person has to act. And Mirza Shem, we should be zeicha to be able to find people who inspire us the way I was inspired by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. Thank you.